Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Soulful, the podcast that reveals everything you've ever wanted to know about sneakers. Hosted by myself, Kish Cash, and my good homie, my brother from another, Jason Coles. How you doing, bro? You all right?
I'm pretty good, Kish. How's things with you?
Yeah, can't complain. I mean, today, I'm very psyched up about today's episode anyway.
Yeah, no, I've been diving into my New Balance history just in preparation for this one, and you know what? I mean, even though I kind of think I know a lot about these brands, I keep discovering new things, and I'm hoping
that's the beauty of it.
You know, we're going to learn some new stuff today from our guests. Why don't you introduce who are we talking today?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So basically, we're going to be chatting to Samuel Pierce, who's one of the designers at New Balance up in Flimby. He's a brilliant guy. I have the pleasure of meeting him on many occasions, and he's a fantastic guy, and his knowledge is deep. And then Richie Rojas, who's New Balance 365 on Instagram, and his knowledge and his appreciation for the brand is just absolutely phenomenal. This guy, I don't know, actually we've got to ask him how many pairs he owns, because I don't know. He's deep with it.
I'd love to know. I just think New Balance is, it's yet another of those brands that people don't appreciate enough, and yet you know, they were one of the very first brands who kind of put customers right at the core of what they do, and they were actually listening to people and getting their feedback and putting that into their shoes. And you know, I mean, we'll try and cover it in the interview, but again, another thing is that people don't realize that New Balance has just been around since the year dot, pretty much.
It's absolutely mad, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? But it's the whole ethos of the brand that we got to find out from these chaps. I mean, you know, the way that they manufacture everything, and you know, to the highest degree, and the way they involve themselves within the community, it's absolutely phenomenal.
Absolutely. Really. Well, let's dive in. I can't wait to talk to these guys. So let's head over. So Sam and Richie, thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today. First thing we want to know before we dive into the brand and a bit of the history, but how did you both develop your love for New Balance? And I know in Sam's case, how did you actually start working for the brand? Do you want to start, Sam?
So I guess my first pair of New Balance was a part of the 600 series. My dad was a tennis player, he did the UK circuits and stuff, so he was into white leather shoes, obviously, because that's what he played in. So, like constantly as a kid, I was getting given like those big chunky white leather. And cross training was obviously a big thing in the early 90s, sort of growing up. So that was my first pair. I guess I didn't really get into New Balance again, as most people do when they're a bit older. But I actually ended up working for New Balance because I did a degree in footwear design and making. In De Montfort in Leicester, so there's only a few courses, you know, around the world that specialize in like footwear as an actual degree. So I actually got into footwear in a weird way, on the essence of, rather than being an industrial designer, I actually know how to like hand make and more the pattern side of things, like shoes as an art form, really, rather than, you know, as a design. So it's quite interesting. But New Balance was a project I did during my time at university, and like literally as I finished, like a job came up for to start there. So it literally followed within 6 months of finishing my degree. I managed to work for the company that I essentially always wanted to work for, which was
crazy. Fantastic.
Pretty lucky, you know.
Definitely. Richie, what about you, mate? You know, what's the deal? Why New Balance?
My roots are kind of start with like punk rock and skateboarding as a 12-year-old. And it was all like Vans and Airwalks, and you sort of need shoes get torn up, so you need a new pair every month. So a year go by, I got a pile of like a dozen shoes, so I'm sort of collecting without even realizing it. Then you see guys like Keith Huffnagel and the Deluxe guys and the Supreme guys, and they're skating in like shell toes and Pumas, so I sort of ditched the skate shoes for athletic shoes. And I was just collecting all of the brands. But as soon as I got a New Balance, I liked them because they were the most comfortable, but also they were sort of the underdog brand at the time. I'm kind of like one of those guys that always roots for the underdog. And I just sort of became obsessed with New Balance and just bought strictly New Balances from like the age of 16 until now.
What was your first pair, though? I got to ask that, Jace. What was the first pair, Richie?
The first pair of New Balance I had was the 496. It was $40 at the time, and I worked at a movie theater for $5 an hour. So that was the most affordable shoe at the time. It was like not as cool as the 574, but that was sort of my gateway into New Balance, was the 496.
And I've heard you've got a pretty impressive collection. How many pairs of New Balance do you have?
I don't know exactly. I stopped counting a couple years ago. That was around 450. I think since then it's probably looking at around 550 to 600 pairs right now.
Whoa.
Oh my God.
That's deep.
Sam, does yours come close to that?
Well, I think what's interesting about mine and Richie's collection is we collect the weirdest stuff, it seems, like worldwide. Like people concentrate on shoes and stuff like that. Me and Richie just seem to find all these random New Balance pieces that just show up out of nowhere for no reason. It would be a dodgy marketing thing from Japan in the 90s and stuff like that, and it just doesn't make any sense. Pairage wise, I sort of cheat because obviously I work this, so I got samples and all sorts of like one-offs that I'm constantly throwing Richie's way, and he's like, well, what's that? So that's kind of fun, but I guess I must be like 350, something like that. You know, it becomes a problem when it gets that high, but we all know what it's like.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Like Sam said, it's with me and Sam, it's not just shoes. So we could talk about shoes, but it's clothes, hats, catalogs, like promo items, like weird
promo items are the one. Promo items are just such the bomb, like little mini like shoes or like USB sticks or mugs or all that kind of stuff.
Me and Sam just want it all.
What is the strangest, okay, for the both of you, what's the strangest promo item that you both have, the most like weird, like that only you two would probably appreciate?
I have this it's like a stuffed animal and it's a lobster. It's like it's a stuffed lobster and the claw has a little NB logo, and it was only available in Asia, and I bought two of them, but I don't know the story about like what it was made for or it's like a stuffed animal.
Weird. The lobster story sort of comes from the New England. The idea that lobster's obviously a big thing in that area of the world. So New Balance ended up linking up that way. The weirdest thing I've got is a little like Plasters tin, and it's got like New Balance branded Plasters in it, which is, who knows?
I mean, you know, if you get torn on your toe while you're running, you know, you're pretty good, I guess. I mean, it's a mad one that, you know, the lobster, because, you know, the one thing that Jace and I, you know, want to get down with is we heard that the story of New Balance began with a chicken coop. Thing is, what's the story behind that then?
So it was William H. Riley, who was a British immigrant, essentially went out to Boston to, you know, find his fortune. And whilst he was there, there seems to have, like, dramatized story, but the idea that he wanted to make an arch support using a new technology to support the foot. And whilst he was doing this research, he sort of realized that chickens had this, like, three-pronged, like, balance thing in that foot. And he essentially created a similar thing to, like, fit into your shoe and give you more support under your arch. Right. So that's sort of how the story goes.
How far back was that?
So that was 1906. I mean that's insane to think. Like, most people wouldn't have a clue that New Balance is that old.
No,
you know, like most brands, you know, sort of kicked off in the 60s and 70s. But to think the origins of that brand.
That means essentially New Balance is a British company. If it was a British immigrant that started it,
sort of, yeah.
Yeah, we can claim that one, Jace.
Yeah, we're taking it. We're gonna have that one.
You kind of can, I think.
But 1906 is amazing when you think that, you know, the other brands, Adidas and Puma didn't come along until the 40s, and then Nike, and not until really the 60s. So, and a lot of people don't appreciate just how long New Balance have been around.
Yeah, it's one of those brands that's, it's a no gimmicks. The whole thing's about fit and feel, and they're not, you know, a look at me type brand, and they never have been. They're very conservative in their approach, and they just like to sort of get on with things. And that's, you know, they sort of did it for 100 years with, you know, varying different stories and relations to popular culture. That after a decade of one sort of thing, like being linked to hip hop, say, they then got into like the idea of this dad shoe thing, and then all the coolness from the hip-hop era sort of got forgotten by the new fans. But you know, all the old heads from the 90s remember it on like music videos on De La Soul and you know, everybody like that. It's, you know, pretty easy. It's like the brand keeps reinventing itself.
It's mad. I remember seeing my first pair of New Balance being worn by a rapper. I think it was one of the Jungle Brothers on the What You Waiting For cover.
Classic.
I can't remember if it was Baby Bam or Sammy B or Mike G. I can't remember who it was, but I was just like, whoa. What are these shoes?
He's wearing the NBX 840 in that photo. Yeah.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Richie, this is why we got you on here, mate. Do you know what I mean? You know your stuff, man. Do you know what I mean?
My
earliest recollection of New Balance was, you know, when Brian Robson was wearing New Balance playing for Manchester United in England. And he was a hero of mine. And I was like, what are these? And then obviously that happened. And I was like, okay, hold on. Both of my worlds kind of collided at that point because, you know, being into hip hop and being into football. And I was like, this makes it official. Why is the ethos of New Balance always about quality, always about excellence and pioneering it? How did that all sort of come into the fore?
I think anything with a new brand, I think the concept was always to like have a new direction compared to like what other people were doing. So other people were pushing new technologies, which is what you want. But I think the brand always wanted to have that sort of elitist feel, like it's for the best athletes at the time, using the best materials. Mm. And, you know, from the time the brand really started becoming a sports shoe company in the 40s, it's, the late 30s, it sort of really continued that. And even today, it's in its performance element, it's, you know, still got that. And, you know, now things are splintered off into lifestyle. It's exactly the same, you know, really trying to be that best materials they can afford, so the consumer, you know, sort of is aware of that as well.
Do you think you could actually run in some of the sort of retro lifestyle models?
Yeah, I think, you know, definitely. There's an element where some of that technology becomes, like, exempt, essentially. But, you know, the way those things are built and the support they offer, you know, it's there's no reason why not.
Running's always been in New Balance's DNA, hasn't it, really? Because again, most people don't realize that it was New Balance that created the first kind of running shoe for the rest of us. So shoes that weren't just for, you know, kind of pro athletes or, you know, the kind of people you'd see running in an Olympic stadium. They were for ordinary people who just wanted to go running, you know, in the park or something, weren't they? Was it the Trackster was the first kind of real running shoe for the rest of us?
Yeah, definitely. You know, you can tell when you look at that shoe with the like brown leather overlays against the white, and then the crepe sole. It was really, you know, that directed, and it's continued on throughout the history through the 70s even. You know, it was worn a lot off the running track. You know, by celebrities like film stars and things like that. Hollywood had a real push for that.
I think the football thing, you know, was quite interesting as well, because New Balance have always tried to sort of make, as we've discussed, footwear for everyone, really.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, with running was sort of the new cool in the 70s, and it was the big like new thing. Like, we all know the 80s became sort of that workout era. So running was really what happened in the 70s. And, you know, to think then, New Balance didn't really have their own designers and stuff like that. You know, they had factories. A lot of the stuff was outsourced, you know, to create. The brand wasn't sort of big enough at that point. So, you know, a lot of it was, okay, we'll get this material for cheap. So what colours is it? Well, we don't know. We need to just, you know, try and make it work with what we can afford and put it together and, you know, create this thing. It was only really as the 80s sort of come along that they started to establish themselves as, okay, now we can start building proper line plans and things like that. You know, it's very interesting how the history sort of plays out in that way.
What impact did Jim Davis have? Because Jim Davis kind of he came along when, you know, the brand, like you were saying, was still pretty small. But, you know, did he come in and kind of completely change everything? What's that kind of? What was the Jim Davis era all about, or when it first started?
Yeah, so it was the early 70s, obviously, where he bought the company, but that was really where it took a turn. Before that, it was a sports brand, but everybody else was starting to get ahead of them. So now it was like, we need to change, we need a logo, we need branding. And actually, they bought on Terry Heckler, who, you know, very famous, like, American designer. He did the, like, the Starbucks logo and stuff like this. They brought him in, created a... That was where the N logo came from. That was where the design languages started to come in. The 320 was the one that had those fangs on the front.
Yeah.
You see all brands starting to mimic that now as a as a link back to the visual, but, you know, he sort of put it on there and just said, oh, like, evoke speed by putting those lines on there. You know, and it's amazing to think that that design language can carry on and on and on over all these years. So it was really with Terry Heckler sort of alongside the brand that it really started catching fire on feet. It became like shoe of the year in the late 70s, you know, for a performance model. And, you know, from then, that was where, you know, sort of things started, had to be taken very seriously.
I mean, you know, that's the thing that we, I always associate with New Balance, is the level of innovation, is the level of authenticity. It's the reverence due to all the sort of aspects of, you know, making sure that the athlete's performing well, but also the shoes are stand up. That's the thing, the quality really, really does stand up. I mean, Richie, do you own any of the shoes from that era?
Oh, of course. You know, those are grails. So those are shoes I'm constantly hunting. I have a few. I have a few original 320s. I think I have a Trackster, which predates the 320.
Oh, you have a Trackster?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I have a 355, which is like a 320 with a really aggressive trail outsole. That was actually the inspiration for the 327 that just came out. But yeah, those are all shoes that me and Sam are constantly hunting for. If I would rather spend my money on something like that than some hype collab.
Those things are getting harder to find, I would imagine, though.
Yeah, and you see some pairs trade for some crazy amounts of money. I remember this a few years ago, this guy in Germany, I guess he was a running nerd. He just had decades worth of stuff in his garage, and he just unloaded all this stuff on eBay at once. Dozens of pairs of New Balance and Saucony's and Asics. He was wanting like 800 to 1,000 a piece. I didn't have the money. I wish I did, but I had alerted someone at New Balance headquarters in Boston, and New Balance was able to buy a bunch of that stuff to bring home to their own
archive.
Okay,
so New Balance has an archive.
Yeah, they sent this guy to Germany to see it in person, and he purchased it and brought it all back to Boston.
Whoa. What a job. Sam, you thought you had a cool job. That would have been the best job, mate, at New Balance, you know what I mean, you know? But have you actually, Sam, have you actually seen, and Richie, have you actually seen any of these archive pieces? Have you actually been to Boston and checked it out?
Yeah, I've seen some of it in the lobby of the main headquarters. They have a little display there. I've not seen everything, but they have a good amount on display there.
Yeah. Actually, NB Japan have... like an 1,000 shoe archive, so they're really the ones that have, you know, and, you know, in classic sort of Japanese fashion, in the way they nurture their history, it's very understandable why they'd have that. But I've actually taken it, you know, upon myself to try and build this history to get like and understand the history, because the brand never really had an archivist to do all that. So trying to understand the lineage and how all this stuff goes together is something that, you know, I've sort of taken on as my own project, just to try and, you know, figure all these things out, because there's so many gaps, there's so many models that you don't know, the logo's changing. We've made the shoes in so many different countries. We had production in Canada for a while. We, you know, obviously it went to Ireland before it went to the UK. So, you know, it's amazing to just dig into this stuff and, you know, try and master it, really.
Back in the 70s, they, you know, the goal was to grow and to make money. So they literally sold every single pair. No one thought to just save one and archive it somewhere. They literally sold every single shoe. So fast forward to now, and you sort of don't have a comprehensive archive anymore. You have to go out and find the stuff, you know.
Well, I think that's
the same for a lot of brands.
Yeah, for sure.
Back then, they just didn't even think about it. They didn't think about, you know, putting a pair aside for the future.
Right. Yeah, it was definitely a case of like surviving. That, you know, that's why people ask about the numbering system at New Balance, and you try and figure it out. And I was like, well, when you start the numbering off, and you think, okay, you know, we do this shoe, we do the next shoe, and the numbers make sense. But you don't think the company's going to last 100 years. So how do you make a plan when you start off for the numbering? of a model yeah. line if in 100 years time. It doesn't work like that, does it?
It's mad how the 990 seems to be the story right now, but you know, when you go back to sort of when it first came out, you know, what made it so special, you know? Because the thing is, it's one of those things that, you know, we're talking about the DNA going sort of percolating through constantly, but this is a story that came out of nowhere, really, especially with my sort of you know, understanding, you know, and what you said earlier, Sam.
Yeah, for sure. So they had really big success with the 320 at the end of the 70s, but then they essentially tabled things to work on this model for 4 years it took them on innovation. Wow. To try and create this, you know, what they seen as the best possible running shoe of all time. Uh-huh. So it's sort of that Apple ethos of, well, let's not do hundreds of different computers, let's just try and make that one computer and make it the best, and if it's the best, yeah, people will buy it. And that's sort of the ethos, right, they had with the 990. So they like threw everything at it. The CR device was a very new sort of thing, you know, the way it's stitched in at the back there to cup the stability. Actually, the reflective on the back tab is sort of an innovation in itself.
That was the first time anyone had thought to put a reflective thing on a shoe, so you could, you know, if you're jogging,
actually see it when you're running and stuff in night. So,
wow,
you know, yeah. And the sole had three densities of foam in it, which is actually something that the 990 still has now. All the 990s, when you go back, there's always three densities to keep true to that original story. Really, like, innovating at the time there. You know, when you look at it now, it seems so funny that you look at it, it almost looks like every other shoe at the time, but
we just take it for granted now. That's exactly the standard, right?
Yeah,
you know,
but I guess it was what was under the hood in a way with that shoe, because of the technologies and some of the materials on that shoe when it first came out just never been seen before. Mm-hmm. Had they?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and even that gray color, the fact it came out, and that was ended up being selected precursor to a model that it actually released a year before.
Yeah.
And the idea of making something lifestyles.
What was that
shoe? That was the 730.
Okay.
Right.
Which most people won't know about. A shoe they'd done alongside this 990, but they got out first because they needed something to fill the line, essentially. But the whole design ethos behind it was for a runner that wanted to run, like, say, a businessman that wanted to run at lunchtimes.
Yeah.
So the whole idea was it that you could wear it on and off the track, essentially. Right. So they'd done it in, like, a burgundy colour, where all sports shoes before that are always done in those bright colours.
Mm-hmm.
So they made it more wearable and inadvertently sort of fell on this, like, by accident almost, the idea that sneakers can be lifestyle because they're really comfortable. And then, you know, that was that, like, click point where they suddenly realized, oh, you know there's, like, a two angles here. There's that look at me in your face sort of style with all the bright colors running, and then there's this whole other unexplored territory of making something wearable and comfy, you know, with trousers, with jeans. And this was actually the first shoe Steve Jobs would own. It wasn't the 990. It was this 730.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, and then Andy Warhol as well was another guy that had the 730. So,
whoa,
it was amazing to think that was the first model. And everybody links, obviously, to the 990, but it was actually this other model that came out before it that actually sparked this whole trend.
Yeah, why don't New Balance bring back the 730 then, you know?
Yeah.
It's time. They should, yeah.
Is it true, Sam, that I've heard rumours that Steve Jobs actually played some part in kind of, you know, saying to Jim Davis, like, this is what I want in a shoe. I don't know if that's apocryphal or not. I would love to think that Steve Jobs kind of had a hand in a sneaker, but is that true or not?
This is one that I also always had the intrigue and, you know, asked around, and I actually had a chance to speak to like the Davis, like, family and stuff about this. And he confirmed that he didn't have a hand in the, like, the design or anything of this.
Okay.
But
that's a shame.
But he'd spoken about, Jobs was obviously doing his own thing, you know, as well. Yeah. But I think once he'd like bought New Balance and liked him for the grey and the comfort and stuff like that, I think they'd been in contact about the product and stuff. So mm-hmm. there was obviously some kind of line of communication, but I don't think it was so much on a design point of right. view. I think the way it was put to me is he was a 12, US 12 AA, so super narrow width. And right. they essentially sent him a couple of shoes once, but that was it. Like all those other years he had those shoes, you know, New Balance didn't just keep sending him product. We just sent him the shoes like once, and you know, as a gesture, and then after that he just kept buying them.
I heard, yeah, he literally just had, you know, if you can imagine Steve Jobs' wardrobe, he literally just, like, the bottom half of it was just identical pairs of 990s, just rows and rows and rows of them, along with his trademark, you know, black jumpers and blue jeans.
Yeah, it's that Homer Simpson sort of thing when you go into the wardrobe and you just see it all lined up. But, you know, he had a really strong belief in the idea that he didn't have to waste his time thinking about, like, clothing and stuff like that. He could concentrate just on his work.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so that was exactly why he picked the comfiest trousers, he picked the comfiest shoes, and you know, it sort of became legend on that. And people have done it before, like Einstein had done it for years, all the photos he's in the same clothes. So
really, I've never noticed that. I'm gonna have to go back and look now.
yeah so you know
I just wondered if he ever got his laundry mixed up, which one have I worn and which one have I got, you know, it's fresh. Yeah, I mean, I'd be like, what's going on? Yeah. Richie, I got to say, the one thing that we love about New Balance, though, is their grey. That the ability to make grey just seem beyond grey, you know, is what I found. It's like one of the most beautiful things, you know. Do you know why the 990 was produced in grey?
It's the whole story of being this lifestyle model and things like that. But, you know, it's always a bit of a mystery to why it sort of started like that. And why,
so no one's got a clue.
Cool. Well, there's always different things. Other people say it was more expensive to have the brighter colour suedes.
Okay.
So it was cost more to to produce them. So having the duller tones were slightly cheaper. So it was an angle that way you could have a better quality, but, you know, saving the price. But I don't know how relevant and exactly true those things are.
It's crazy because the grey New Balance is like the pinnacle for me. Do you know what I mean? It's just
NB definitely owns that aesthetic, but I don't think there's a single. I don't know if that. I think that will forever be a mystery type thing.
How many pairs of grey NBs have you got there, Richie?
I mean, I don't, dozens and dozens. Like,
is grey the most predominant colour in your footwear palette?
Yeah, I mean, there's so, like Sam said, there's so many angles to it. It's subdued. It's sort of mysterious. It evokes many emotions. It evokes no emotion. It's a color that speaks to me. It's like, that's the color how I feel. That's the color how I dress. That's the color that my city looks like. You know what I mean? It's just kind of like all things and no things at once, you know?
That's mad.
There's an old
that's crazy.
There's an old advert in the late 80s where it's sort of there's this woman like reaching for a shoe on the wall, and then every single shoe on that wall, there must be 25 pairs of New Balance on the wall, every single one of them is grey. It's like, that is a consistent palette. When I'm designing, we look through the range, we're like, is there enough colour in there? And we constantly think about it, and I just have that on the wall now as a reference and be like, no we've got enough colour, as long as we've got that grey sort of tone in there.
Brilliant.
We're okay.
Oh, that's wacky.
When we had Stephen Smith on a previous episode, he was explaining to us about the whole numbering system. Because again, I guess New Balance are probably not unique, but just so well known for assigning numbers to all their models. And he explained that, you know, the number comes from the fact that it was the price point. Is that how did that work? Is that true? So it was literally, was it $99, or how did that work?
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's how they sort of decided on doing it. I actually thought Jim's obviously got a big collection for cars, and he likes Porsches, so I thought there might have been a link there to like the 99 series from a Porsche side, but actually it was just the price, and that's essentially how it started. So the idea back then was the higher the number, the better the shoe, essentially, and that rings relatively true still. It bounces around a little bit now, but generally that's, you know, sort of how you work it out. The 1080 is always the 1080 or the 1260 or something like that. Those thousand numbers are the ones that are generally the ones with the most tech and things like that.
Yeah,
so.
Well, that's crazy.
I feel like that system was pretty accurate up until maybe like 10, 15 years ago, and then it sort of goes out the window. But yeah, the 574 was, you know, $55 to $60. The 990 was $100. The 1300 was $130, things like that. It was probably like around the early 2000s, and it's. But yeah, like Sam said, it's still sort of loosely like that today, just not as much.
So, what kind of people were buying New Balance? Yeah. I mean, obviously fairly wealthy people, but I mean, did that mean that, you know, for that shoe especially, I mean, you almost had a unique kind of customer who was wearing and running in those?
Yeah, exactly. And this is where the brand sort of splits into being this elitist, but then also like cult following. This is when it started showing up on the streets because people wanted to wear it as a statement. You know, and this is before any other brand that really had this, you know, we had no other brand had gone this far and decided to put the price up that high. And it really, this is where it really started becoming this, the story of New Balance is so rich now because of, you know, that moment in time.
Yeah.
Right.
What was mad around that time is, like, you know, a lot of the big guns were moving their manufacturing to the Far East. But the thing is, New Balance were like, oh, no, we're not doing that. They opened a factory up in England. What's the story with that? I mean, no, I'm absolutely ecstatic about that, but what was going on? What was the deal behind that one?
Yeah, amazing decision, really. And this is just that classic thing of what Richie said before of the underdog and doing things differently and thinking differently. And it's the reason I got into the brand having the UK manufacturing. But the idea there was if all these other companies are building things in Asia, and then shipping them here, we can get ahead of the market by building things in the US and the UK, building things quicker and getting them out to market quicker, reacting quicker to the market, which is, you know, actually pretty...
It's still true today.
Pretty smart, yeah.
Yeah.
Really, yeah?
Mm. So the obviously the investment and the price of things are higher.
Yeah.
But they'd already tested that in the market and they felt like that was a strong enough... They were strong enough to continue that. And then it was about reacting quicker. So where our production is now, a lot of the European stuff we design specific for the European consumer.
Yeah.
We have a big 901 following in Italy and things like that, and we work closely with their teams to get the designs right for them. So
yeah, the amount of the 990s, the 992s, 993s that you used to see on eBay Italy. Mm-hmm. I was just like, what's going on over there? Why are they getting this stuff when we aren't? And the stuff's made in England.
Yeah, so that's sort of the reason. And then the other reason, obviously, is what you said before, Kish, in the football soccer thing. They sort of built there to start that production. Because before that, they hadn't really done any soccer-based stuff. And so all the people that made those cleats and stuff were, you know, in Britain, that was where the best boots were. Mm-hmm. Sort of made, and we had some kind of history in it, and so that's where our UK manufacturing for all our football boots came from.
Why is the UK based in Flimby and not somewhere like Northampton where we sort of...
No, it's very true, but actually there was some shoe manufacturing and stuff up in that area, and in Northampton, obviously, you know, it was more expensive for the plots, and they were already taken up by all these other companies. Mm-hmm. They then took advantage of the fact that Cumbria had this, you know, by chance, like really amazing, like beautiful area of the world to actually produce shoes. And it was one of those situations they sort of took a risk on, and they invested a lot of money at first, but you know, it's still going strong today. It's amazing. The 40th anniversary of UK production is about to tick round in.
Oh, really?
in 2022. Yeah.
Okay, so I've got a question, right? And I and you know, let's put patriotism aside for a minute. Which one's better, made in UK or made in USA?
I have to say the UK. I prefer the UK made stuff.
Okay.
Ooh, the USA stuff is really strong and really great, but the UK stuff is, the shapes are on point, the materials are always on point. It's close, but I like the UK stuff a little better.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Sam, are you allowed to answer that question?
Well, yeah.
He's a bit biased.
I'll say that because I work on the UK stuff. But I think the production is quite different because we have one factory in the UK and we can use all these amazing European suppliers. So we can make very tight lines and very specialist product using all these exotic materials and stuff made, you know, in Italy and things like that.
Yeah.
US production is a bit tougher. They're making bigger numbers. They've got five factories over there, six factories technically. But they have to use US materials. They can't use the European materials, otherwise it doesn't count as being being made in the US and stuff. So you need to have a certain number of that material. So they have to use American suppliers, and there's less suppliers than what we have in Europe. So that's why a lot of their stuff is like performance based. Even the 990 has elements of performance in it still, where ours are more of a lifestyle base, so we get to be a bit more creative on that side of things. So
yeah, I've got a pair of the I think it's the CT300s that you did, like this real ale pack, which is about as English as it gets.
Yeah.
But yeah, the quality was just amazing, and then the colorways are obviously all to do, you know, with various ales. So you got this beautiful kind of brown, I think there was like a red, which is like a burgundy kind of color, but even like using terry cloth, you know, to kind of get this foam, you know, off the head of the beer kind of thing. I just love that kind of creativity. Brilliant.
We had some funny ones in the past. We, you know, the one before that, the like precursor to that was the real ale, not the real ale, sorry, the pub pack. And it took the three like most famous pubs in the UK sort of names and made three. And then on the inside where the New Balance was, it had like a ring stain from the glass around the branding and things. And, you know, we'd done all sorts. We had the tea pack, the spare laces came in tea bags and sort of things like that. So,
oh, amazing. Yeah. So love things
you,
like that.
You could get really creative.
Brands
about
should
that
do fun. That.
As far as
brands should have that kind of fun.
As far as UK centric stuff, I really love the Hannon collabs with the Northern Soul theme, because I'm a big like music nerd, so I love Northern Soul references.
They're some
stuff.
Of my grails.
Yeah.
In fact, the Hannon collabs, period, every single New Balance they've done, I haven't got a single pair. It's before I knew the guys, and they just went like that. I bought the 990s with the Scholler upper. The 990 is like, you know, we're at that point now with the 990, but it's a dad shoe, essentially.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely evolved into that. Like, if you go back only a few years...
I mean, is it a compliment?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think so. I think it's a derivative of the fact you had people like Jobs and Warhol in those models, and the fact it was, you had to be older and understand it more to buy it, and that's, you know, kids wouldn't be interested in it, and it, you know, almost to the point where kids couldn't afford it. It wasn't designed for kids, you know. It's the dad shoe thing has sort of evolved, the brand's evolved into that, and I think that's a great direction for it.
Definitely, when you look at so many of the designs that are coming out now, which are so clearly inspired, you know, by those early New Balances and the dad shoes, because I mean, I'm not a big fan of them. That the Balenciagas, I think, is it the Triple S?
The Triple S.
You can see that, yeah, that they've clearly been inspired by New Balance along the way. But then you've even got, you know, and probably partly because of Stephen Smith. But when you look at a lot of the Yeezys, again, you know, that's the dad shoe, you know, made contemporary, really.
Yeah, and you know, as you've spoken to Steve, he'll tell you he was very influenced by New Balance because it was his favorite brand growing up.
And
I think when you have that affiliation to something like that, and then you work for them, or you know, you collect them and things like that, it makes it all that more special, and you can put you know, something into it that maybe you couldn't if you were just getting paid for it. You know, you almost need to have that next level of interest to really put into it. And I think, you know, listening to all your podcasts, anybody that's involved in the brand will tell you that when they speak, you realize their passion, and that's what really makes it special, and that's what comes across most when I listen to these.
No, totally. One thing I'm confused about with the 990 series, right? You got the 990, then you got the version. So you got the version 1, version 2, version 3, version 4, version 5, which has just come out. But then you got the 991, 9902, 993, and so on and so forth. So how does that sequentially all sort of marry up? I've been trying to figure it out, and I don't know, because there's no reference material for me on that.
They took a break in the 990 series. Maybe, so they did 990 version 1 and then version 2. Uh-huh. And then I guess, you know, I think they needed to move on. So instead of doing version 3, they went to 991.
Okay.
Then it goes 992 and then 993. By this time, so many years have passed, it's sort of like, let's return to that classic shoe. So after 993, it then becomes 990 version 3, then version 4, then version 5.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
But then when do the other 99s come in? Like the later ones?
Well, the
99. Because you got the 995 and the 6 and the 7.
Right. So you had and Stephen Smith did the 997, right?
Yep, 996, 997. We did. We went 990, then we did 995, which was sort of the update, and then that's how it followed on for the next few years with 996, 997. But this is what I mean. They'd almost run out of numbers, so they'd gone 990, 995, and then they're like, well, what do we do next? Because there isn't a 990 then. So then they had to start shortening the numbers.
If you look at a 990 V1 and a 995 side by side, it's very similar. It's very close. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, there was only a couple of tweaks on the way it fitted and the way after running in it, like where you'd get the impacts on the creasing and things like that. And it was very sort of subtle. There's some good little backstories to these things, like the 998. If you look at the like the TPU, like plastic details on it. It's got like these lines with these dots, and that's actually a graphic equalizer he was inspired by. It. So
there's a musical association with that.
yeah, definitely.
That's wicked. That's my favorite shoe. That's my favorite That's my favorite New Balance shoe, the 998.
Yeah, well, that's a little tidbit that people don't generally know. Guy called Kevin Brown who did it. It was a great model, and just that little graphic equalizer thing is like a smart little tidbit that people don't know about.
What's your favorite 990s then, chaps? Or should we break it down? Should we break it down, yeah? What is your favorite 990, right, out of the version 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5? Then what is your favorite collaboration version out of that? And then what is your favorite non-990, 990 series shoe?
I'm going to go with 997. It's very sleek. It's pretty comfy.
Beautiful.
That's my favorite 99 series shoe. Mm-hmm. But if you're talking 990s, I like the 990 V3.
Okay.
I think it's pretty underrated, but that one really exploded here in Philly a couple years ago. That kind of set off the whole 990 thing here in Philly. I love the V3. It has like a little carbon fiber piece at the bottom, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Collab, I don't know. I really like the Stussy V4, the kind of cream tan suede one.
That was the 990 version 4, yeah?
Yeah.
I wish I had that shoe. I don't know why I didn't get it. I'm just face palm.
I got two of them.
Oh, you got
not
two?
Fair. Not
yeah.
fair.
Okay, we can talk. Sam, what about you, mate?
I'm going 991. I think it's the perfect balance of being a shoe that it looks technical and sporty enough, but in those right materials, you know, it looks amazing with like smarter clothing and stuff. I just think it's that perfect balance that when you get into the 992, 993, they all become a bit chunky and heavy. Right. Yeah. When the 991, you know, doesn't have that, it's still got that shape. And then with the V's, I'm at V3 as well. V2 I love, but I've got so many more V3s, there's a reason for that. You know, I think the technology and the details on it are just that little bit more refined.
Yeah. But I've always considered New Balance to be there, like that, having Aston Martins on your feet. Seriously, yeah. The quality is good. You know, Aston Martins with their Connolly leather, interior and all that kind of stuff. And you're just looking at them, just going, whoa, these are actually mad. It would be amazing if New Balance ever did a collaboration with Aston Martin, for example. I think that would kind of align quite nicely, actually.
Yeah, the way footwear and cars, like, link up in that way. A lot of designers in the past have used that as their inspiration. Yeah. So, you know, there's something in it for sure. Yeah. But, yeah, to work for New Balance was an opportunity I wanted to take up because they are the brand that keep all those materials at the best level, you know, the highest quality. And you can buy a lot of things and they've got microfiber on, and, you know, that never really interested me. I always wanted to make sure that, you know, if I'm buying it, I've got, like you said, that Aston Martin style thing where it's the best you can put on it, and totally. You know, when you get that hand feel and the nap on it, it's great.
One day we'll all be wearing 990 stepping out of our Aston Martins. You know, that's the dream, right?
Definitely.
You know, that's how we roll. Do you know what I mean? One last thing on this one though, Sam. Give it to you. Do you ever think that you will ever be able to look at the 990 series and design your own version? You know, update one. Or would you want to, or do you think they would ever let you go, you know, like, we've seen some quirky ones like the 991.5 and certain stuff where they're, you know, making hybrid models, etc.
Yeah. My feeling here is there is one number in the 99 series that has never been done, and it's the last one, and I'd love to have a crack at that one. That's the 994.
Ooh, can we expect one of those?
Like, the number didn't exist. The number doesn't exist. All the collectors ask about it and why it never happened, and it's sort of the last one, you know, because now we have to be onto the V's because there is no other. So it would be amazing to have the opportunity to sort of fill in that void. It'd be a lot of fun. Amazing.
Yeah, no, definitely. And Richie, will they ever let you collab?
That would be a dream come true. That would be awesome. I did make a one-on-one in Flimby, which I designed. That was cool.
You did a one-on-one?
Yeah.
You've been to Flimby?
For the 35th anniversary.
Jace, hold on. Sorry to cut you off there, mate, right? But Jace and I have not been to Flimby.
Sort it out.
Go back to that, Richie.
Yeah, for the 35th anniversary, they invited me and some other collectors there, and we got to design and have them produced and see them made in person. And, you know, they made one pair. So, and my pair was a 1500. And I sort of modeled it after the Hacienda, the legendary nightclub in Manchester with Factory, because it was also the Hacienda's 35th anniversary. So I kind of wanted to marry two 35th anniversaries that were local to that part of the country. So that's sort of a collab. But yeah, to have a collab like for a general release, that would be sick. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Richie, you got to send us some photos of that shoe, and we'll stick it up on the Instagram. We'd love to see that.
Yeah, I remember it was funny, you know, there was a lot of promo and marketing for that event, and the custom stitching on my tongue, it says, you know, FAC 51, which was the,
of course, Factory
the
Records.
Name for Factory Records, and we sort of had to edit that out from the marketing because they didn't want any flack from Factory Records themselves. So all the pictures of my shoe, that tongue is sort of angled where you can't read it entirely.
Well, can we rectify that?
Yeah, we'll do it.
I mean, that's fine. You know, you got to do what they got to do. You know what I mean? But that was my my inspiration and stuff.
We're eagerly anticipating the invite to Flimby.
Yeah. At the end of that event, I kind of made a joke like, "So, see you guys for the 36th, right? See you like in a year."
Oh my god!
But Sam said, 40 is coming up in 2 years, so I don't know. I'm sure they'll be doing something special. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's it. Maybe that's the one.
We'll keep an eye on the posts, Sam.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we've run out of time, chaps.
Well, thanks so much, guys. Brilliant it's been stuff. An absolute treat having you both on and just hearing some of those stories, and because I think even a lot of New Balance fans won't have heard some of that stuff. So thanks so much.
That's right.
Take care, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Pleasure.
Glad to be
Thank
here.
You.
Wow. I'm just absolutely overwhelmed, Jace, by that episode, mate. Do you know what I mean? But the thing is, it's the last one of the series.
It is.
And I don't think it's enough, mate. I don't think it's enough. We've only just got started, right?
I know. We're having too much fun for this to be the last one. You know, I have to say, I'm kind of sad in a way that this is the end of this series, you know. I mean, like I said, you know, we've had some brilliant guests on the show so far. Yeah. You know, big thanks to all of those guys. We've had Stan Smith and Steve Van Doren, Henry Davis, Thomas Turner, who's given us a lot of support.
Chris Severin, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, Stephen Smith, the guys that we've just had, you know. And,
just mind-blowing, really. Just mind-blowing.
Absolutely wonderful, guests. Do you know what I mean? Absolutely. Rod Dixon,
yeah, what a legend.
I'm actually trying to remember everyone we've had on, because we've got to give them all an individual shout-out, really,
yeah,
haven't we?
Absolutely. You know what I mean? Well, and I hope everyone's enjoyed it. You know, the podcast really does exist purely for you guys, the listeners, and you know, we hope you'll keep telling your friends and family all about the podcast.
Yeah,
please do
give a shout
sharing
to Erin Narlow, you know, because she was absolutely wicked.
Exactly. Yeah. And well, and you know, before we go, we've got to thank the guys at Goalhanger. You know,
without them,
thanks to,
you know,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
Joey,
thanks to
you know,
Tony,
John, you know, the whole lot. Do you know what I mean?
Harry, we can't forget Harry, and obviously
Harry,
the big man,
the
big man, exactly. Mr. Gary Lineker. You know, thanks guys for having faith in us and for letting us just come on here and have a lot of fun. You know, it's been amazing.
Just remember to share, subscribe to the podcast, because I think that's the important thing, really, to make sure that you don't just keep the knowledge just for yourselves and just make sure it just gets spread out, isn't it, really?
That's it. Share the love. And, you know, we've had such brilliant feedback from a lot of you, and we know you're enjoying the show, and we've listened to your comments and everything and tried to incorporate that. So, you know, and even while we're off air, keep sending us those messages. We really do appreciate them. And, you know, you can, as ever, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at soulful_podcast. You can follow the Master Blaster himself, Mr. Kishkash, at Kishkash1, and myself on at Made by Jace. And, well, I think we've asked you once. We're going to ask you again. Please do subscribe to the podcast. And, leave us a really nice, splendid review. See you next time.
Cool.